Hello there, and thank you so much for joining us for Market Sense. I'm Heather Hedges with Fidelity. So we've got some mixed labor market data to talk about today. So although the U.S. unemployment rate crept up slightly higher last month, that rate's still below 4%, and that indicates that the economy and the labor markets are still showing signs of strength regardless. But also, just this morning, we got some fresh inflation data that showed that inflation actually ticked up last month. So we've got a lot to talk about, and to help us digest this information and understand what it might mean for investors is Urien Timmer, Fidelity's Director of Global Macro. Plus, we're also joined today, as we often are, by Fidelity branch leader Leanna DeVinny. And she's here today to talk about the latest retirement trends and the many ways you can reach your financial goals. You know, it's been several years since the start of the pandemic, but still the societal and economic impact of the pandemic is still being felt right now. So as a result, many Americans have decided to opt for a more non-traditional approach to retirement, you could say. And according to a new Fidelity survey that just came out today, the Fidelity State of Retirement Planning Study, 66% of the more than 2,000 investors who responded to that survey said the pandemic made them more intentional about focusing on their personal passions and dreams in retirement. So we've got a lot to unpack today. I'm really excited for this conversation. Thank you to both of you for joining me for it.
Thank you. I'm excited as well.
Great to see you both. Welcome back, Leanna.
Thank you.
And before we begin, I just want to remind everybody, you can talk to Leanna and Urien. You can submit their questions to them by typing in the comments section on LinkedIn and also on our website if you're watching us there live and on YouTube anytime. And we really do read all those questions, and we love to hear what's on your mind and then try to incorporate your questions into a future episode. So keep those questions coming. And with that, today is Tuesday, March 12th. Urien, I'd love to start with you, and I'd love to talk big picture, if you would please, today. First of all, I'd love to ask you about the U.S. economy and where it is in the business cycle, because this is a topic that we haven't talked to you about in the past couple of weeks. We haven't had a good check-in on this for a while. So we have a business cycle graphic to show you if you're watching our show. If you're listening to the show, though, I'm going to walk you through it. So we've been talking for quite a while about the economy being in the late cycle, and that's the phase that usually precedes a recession. It tends to be where growth still is positive, but it is slowing and volatility is increasing during a late cycle, traditionally. So last year, the economic signs were really pointing to the U.S. being in a late cycle. But I know, Urien, now you've kind of been starting to wonder if instead we might actually be transitioning and working backwards to a mid-cycle phase of the economy. And that might indicate that the economy has a little bit more runway, so to speak, if you will, before we have to start thinking about a recession. So first of all, is that really possible that we might have more runway now? And what's your latest thinking on all of this?
Yeah. So if you think about the different cycle phases, it's almost like seasons in a year, right? So winter is a recession. Spring is the recovery of that recession. That's early cycle. Mid-cycle is where the market tends to spend most of its time. It's when it's kind of Goldilocks. Everything is good. Earnings are growing. Interest rates are well-behaved. The Fed is sort of out of the way. So that's the dominant quadrant, if you will, of the business cycle. And then you get late cycle, which is sort of this frustrating, funky period where things are still okay, but they're not as okay as they were. And at this point, usually you get inflation on the rise. You get the Fed, which is responding to that inflation. You get, you know, profit margins coming down, but still okay. Earnings growth is moderating, but still positive. And most of the time, eventually, just like after fall comes winter, you do get a recession. And that is kind of how the market or the business cycle works. But as you know, as we've learned over the last so many years, it's never a straight line. And there are times where you kind of go from mid to late, and then you kind of go back to mid, and maybe then go back to late and then to a recession. So these cycles can get elongated. And, you know, I actually just spent the weekend geeking out on the 1960s in terms of finding parallels. And actually, in 1966, we had somewhat of a similar episode where there was a lot of fiscal stimulus. The Fed was tightening policy, but then there was kind of a growth scare. The yield curve had slightly inverted. The Fed sort of backed off. and actually achieved a soft landing. And we went from mid to late, back to mid. And then eventually 2 years later, the recession did happen. That was in 1970. But you can see how the cycle kind of got stretched out. And so that seems to be what's happening here. You know, despite very aggressive Fed moves over the last few years, the economy remains pretty resilient. You know, the jobs numbers are still okay. Inflation, which we got today, is sticky. You know, kind of 3 is the new 2, if you will. We're kind of stuck at 3% right now. But it looks like, you know, the steam has kind of gotten off the economy without actually crashing it into a recession. So there are some parallels here. And, you know, this has been a resilient cycle. So we're not quite ready to put the, you know, to put the dot in that red phase of that chart you're showing.
And just to be clear, when you say 3% is the new 2%, you don't mean that 3% is the new target for the Fed necessarily, but you do think that 3% is where we're going to have to kind of learn to live and be comfortable with for a while now, or learn to accept? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. So the CPI came out today, and we had what's called the PCE report last week, I think it was. And so, you know, we obviously back in 2022, inflation was at 9%, which was, you know, crazy. It's down to 3%, and it's kind of staying stuck there. And so when you look at some things like housing costs and the cost of going to a restaurant or a hotel or traveling, getting on a plane, you know, those parts of the cost structure are proving to be pretty sticky. So when I say 3 is the new 2, what I'm saying is that not that the Fed is targeting 3, the Fed is targeting 2, just to be clear on that. But I don't know that we're actually going to get down to 2 on a consistent basis.
Okay. All right. You had also just mentioned the yield curve. You can remind people what the yield curve is, but that was one of my questions as I was just listening to you talk, because you're saying we might have more runway before we hit a recession, but the yield curve is still inverted. And you have many times reminded us here on Market Science, Yurian, that the yield curve is a signal that has never failed in predicting recessions in the past. So if it's true that we are going to be able to go back to a mid-cycle, does that mean the yield curve was wrong for the first time in history?
Well, we never want to say that. Those are dangerous words. But part of that kind of frustrating late cycle quadrant is usually an inverted curve. And the reason I say it's frustrating because the even though the yield curve has always been correct in predicting a recession, the lead and lag times are all over the place, right? It can happen as quickly as a few months after the curve inverts. And by the way, the yield curve inversion means that short rates have risen faster than long rates, and therefore short rates are above long rates. Usually that happens when the Fed is raising rates, and then the yield curve uninverts when the Fed is then cutting rates, which, you know, at some point it will likely do, but whether it's enough to actually uninvert the yield curve is not clear. But the signal, even though it's proven to be accurate, the timing has been all over the place. So it can take a few months, it can take a few years. And actually, the market has never held up this long after the curve has reached what we call peak inversion, at the most inverted point. So if the market continues to hold up, which I expect it will, it will be a first. And whether that means the yield curve no longer works, or that there are other forces at play here that make the yield curve less reliable, you know, we'll leave that for the history books to decide. But right now, what we're seeing is that earnings are growing again. Fourth quarter earnings season was very positive. And so the economy, which seemed to have inflected down, is uninflecting. And maybe there are technicalities in the bond market that make the yield curve less reliable than it has. But for now, the numbers look good.
Repeat for us one more time. What would be the first you're in?
Sorry?
What would be a first?
Oh, the market has never risen longer than it has now after the yield curve reached its peak inversion level. So when you add up all the cycles historically, usually by now the market starts to fall. So if the market doesn't fall starting like tomorrow, it really will be a first. And so, you know, it's good to be in that rare company, I guess, if you're on this side of the trade. So
okay. All right, Urian, we'll have to watch and see what happens. All right, let's switch gears now, though, and talk about saving for retirement. So as I mentioned at the top of the show, Fidelity just conducted a survey. I'm so excited to share the results with you today because they just came out today. We're so excited to share them with you. And that survey found people are feeling confident about their retirement plans, but that they wish they had started earlier. And this is across generations. And the results here are pretty eye-opening. They're on the screen, but if you're listening to us as a podcast, let me break it down for you. First of all, Gen Zers are already planning for retirement at 20 years old. And listen to this, those Gen Zers, they're pretty aggressive. They're wishing they had started planning for retirement at just 17. Compare that to boomers who didn't start until 43. That's a big difference, right? And then millennials and Gen Xers are somewhere in the middle there. They are starting the journey in their late 20s or their mid 30s, respectively. Also, the survey respondents said they wanted to approach their golden years with more intention, with more opportunity. And that's where you come in, Leanna, and some of your colleagues, Leanna. And I was hoping you could today walk us through the process of creating a retirement plan that works for where we are in our lives and also how we can map out the best strategy for reaching our individual goals.
Sure, absolutely. I'm excited by this. And I am always so impressed year after year, this survey, just the younger age people start retiring. It's excellent. Right. And just to hear the intentionality.
Talk about goals. I mean, they've got some real strong goals.
They do. And so that's the first step. It's talking about the goals. And that's the fun part. So you can come in or sit down or even just start speaking with your planning partners, we call them, of what you want life to look like after work. So as you approach retirement, what will your lifestyle look like? What do you have? What do you still need to acquire? What will your spending look like? A financial consultant on my team just recently asked a great question, and she said, what is going to make your golden years worthwhile? So when you're accumulating and you're busy working, like, it's hard to sit down and think through that, but just start asking questions of when would you like to retire? What's the lifestyle you envision? Where do you want to live? What are some of the big purchases you may have? Some people want to prioritize lifestyle. Others want to continue to save and potentially leave a legacy. So these are all questions that can help turn into what your retirement income plan may look like and just your retirement goals. But I would just say too, as we continue talking, a lot of the clients that come into our branch, they love sitting down and just talking through having these conversations because we just don't have time sometimes in our busy lives to sit down and be thoughtful or intentional about it.
Yeah, I love that. And it's all part of feeling comfortable and confident about the plan and that it matches their lifestyle, right? Which is so important for being able to sleep at night. So when it comes to saving for retirement, the latest survey also found out that more than 63% of workers had all of their retirement savings in a target date fund. Of course, you know what I'm talking about here is those target funds that are typically labeled by the intended year of retirement, like a 2045 fund. What are your thoughts on that kind of a strategy, Leanna?
And we see this often. So first, let me explain how these funds work. So you're correct. The date is paired with the anticipated date of retirement. So typically you see them in fives. So the 2045 fund is targeted to retirement on or around year 2045. So that fund today has about a 20-year time horizon. And as the fund approaches its target, it's gradually going to become more conservative and it's going to reduce the overall stock exposure, increase more of the bond exposure, because again, that target date of 2045 is saying we now need to potentially turn this into income because I'll be in retirement and start needing to live my cash flow. So target date funds, clients often call them a one fund solution, or they come and say, I pick this as part of my company plan because I can set it and forget it. Now, we never want to just set and forget our investments, but there are advantages to these type of funds, specifically that they're really well diversified between stocks, bonds, and short-term investments. And so it provides that one fund type of solution that's well diversified, and it should be overall aligned to your time horizon. Again, the goal of when you're anticipating retirement. So I'd say, though, as investors near the time they need to start using this and saving towards income, we really want to take a look and make sure that the investment objectives of the fund is still in line with what you're looking for. So for example, you may have this target date fund in your 401k, but then you might have CDs, cash, or conservative type investments elsewhere. And when you look at your broad portfolio, you may in turn be too conservative. On the flip side, this may be paired with other things that may be too aggressive. So it's always worthwhile to sit down and make sure that a fund with these objectives, match your overall risk tolerance and financial picture.
Okay. All right. That's really helpful, Leanna. I wanted to talk about something else from the survey that I also found to be pretty interesting. This is a new trend, and this is sort of, you know, the theme of our show today, the new retirement. So the survey found just under 1/5 of respondents claim to have retired and then unretired, meaning they went back to work. And their reasons for doing so are pretty evenly divided. But one of the themes seems to be, like I talked about at the beginning of the show, the pandemic just changed so many of us. The pandemic also changed the workplace. So, Leanna, can you talk about how we might assess if unretiring is right for us or if it might actually have to be something that we might have to consider as well?
Sure. And I remember when we kind of got back to reality, a lot of clients would come in and say like, oh, I didn't like that. That was almost a preview of what retirement would be. And I was feeling kind of bored and I need activity. So I wasn't surprised to see some of these, what are we calling them, the new retirement or unretire that came out in the survey. And I think it's due to the rise of remote and hybrid work, more flexible working arrangements. It's leading to how many are approaching their golden years. So the two reasons respondents said they decided to unretire was the need to increase income to cover the essential expenses. And then all others said they just needed activity. And then behind those two answers were also valid reasons of feeling more purpose needed, wanting to drive more income for discretionary spending, boredom, like I mentioned, that client, family needs, and also healthcare benefits and rising costs there. So I think as we help our clients, we'll help go through what's possible for them, what unretirement may look like, how that matches their overall goals as well. Another thing we saw, though, was doing semi-retirement. So folks wanting to kind of slow down, and some choose consulting or doing different roles and jobs that gives different purposes. But we want to make sure that we can help plan for that and really talk about healthcare costs. So if you're doing that before Medicare age, or what it would mean if you're not having employer-sponsored contributions and not maximizing your 401k or retirement contributions as well. So all things that we help go through an analysis with, but it was an interesting part of the survey.
Yeah, indeed.
I wouldn't know what to do with myself if I retire tomorrow.
That's why you're still going.
Not surprised by that at all, are you, Leanna?
No, not at all. And we need Urien, so he needs to stay here as long as possible.
Absolutely. But you're not anywhere near retirement age, Urien, so we don't have to think about that for a very long time, right?
Correct.
Both of my parents, I think I've shared this with both of you, but both of my parents are still working in their mid-70s. And my father sort of has taken a step back and has taken more of a part-time role in his job so he can hang out with the grandkids. And my mother always says that her contribution to the grandkids is lending my father, because my mother actually has a really demanding full-time job where she's still in the office every single day. So
wow, that's... My grandfather's 94 and he works. I put that in quotations because he works at a golf course so that he can golf the golf course. But it's pretty impressive. He turns 95 in September.
That's is he still good. Driving to the golf course?
Yes, he is.
Sorry, Urien, what were you saying?
No, I said that's impressive.
It is.
I mean, yeah, it just goes to show you, you know, when you do what you love, it doesn't really feel like work, and retirement's really, really evolving. Yeah. Lastly, let's just talk a little bit more about strategies, Leanna, because, you know, I love picking your brain on these kinds of strategies and ways to stay on track and also help grow your money. How can you help grow your money in retirement? And I know I wanted to mention really quickly that there is a deadline we want our viewers and listeners to know about to contribute to your Roth IRA for tax year 2023. So what's that deadline, Leanna?
Sure. And I'll be brief. It's April 15th. So that's looking at your IRA, so traditional IRA or your Roth IRA. So many employer-sponsored plans, so think your 401k, your 403b, that's typically end of the year, December 31st. But the IRS gives an additional 3.5 months for you to do a contribution to your Roth IRA or traditional IRA. In the states of Massachusetts and Maine, it's actually April 17th due to a holiday. But these are great vehicles, as to your point, Heather, just to contribute and maximize your retirement savings. Just some differences between the two. So a traditional IRA, you're taking pre-tax money, you're contributing to an IRA account. It's $7,500 is the contribution limits, over $1,000 on top of that if you're over 50. That money grows pre-tax. And then when you're age 59 and a half, you're able to take out income, and that would be then taxed at ordinary income. A Roth IRA account acts a little differently because you contribute with after-tax dollars, and that money can grow tax-free. And then you're not needing to pay income tax on that as long as you meet the requirements of the Roth IRA. So it's a great vehicle just to have tax savings for you and compounding growth over time. The Roth IRA does come with income limitations. So I know we're going up on time, but two great ways to continue to save. And that deadline is April 15th.
Okay. Thanks, Leanna. And yeah, just real quick, I know we're up on time, but Urien, you know, we do also rely on market growth to help us reach our retirement goals. So I thought this might be a good place to sort of just involve you in the discussion quickly. You know, a lot of our viewers and listeners are DIY investors, and they're tuning in for your guidance on the markets every week. What are some key factors investors should be considering when creating a strategy to help grow their money?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And, you know, it's finding the intersection on the sort of the risk reward curve. We call that the efficient frontier, where you can get the most return per unit of risk, to sound very technical, and just start early and dollar cost average. You know, it's great. One of my kids' friends ask me in their 20s, you know, how do I start? It's great that they are starting, just like your survey said. And the thing about dollar cost averaging, you know, putting away whatever, $100, a couple hundred bucks a month and just keep going for decades, you know, you're never going to have to worry about buying at the high, or, you know, you're never going to buy at the low either. But it's just a very proven strategy to build wealth over a long term. But starting early is the key.
Yep. And that survey found that indeed the younger generation is starting to think about retirement much earlier than we were, our grandparents were. So that's very encouraging. All right, quickly, we don't have a lot of time. Timmer's take real quick, Urien, what are we watching this week?
You know, the equal weighted S&P 500, which is kind of strips out these big magnificent seven stocks, started finally making new all-time highs last week after 26 months below it. And so I'm watching that market momentum. Earnings season is behind us. Economy seems to be in a good place. The Fed, we kind of know where the Fed is. So it's sort of, you know, it's actually starting to get a little quiet right now, which is good.
Okay.
Boring is good.
Yeah, no news is good news, right? That's what I subscribe to. Thank you, Urien. Thank you, Leanna, for this very timely discussion today. And Leanna, I learned so much about your grandfather today. Hope he's a big Market Sense viewer. And this is the time of the show when we want you to get out your camera phones for our QR code, because we do want to let you know about a free webcast that actually I was a part of. I'm proud to say that I helped to write it and I hosted it. And it's called Making a Plan for Retirement Income. And we talk about the ins and outs of a retirement income plan, which Leanna touched on today, how to protect your money against key risks and how to grow your money. So you can either hit that QR code with your camera phone, or you can type into your browser this URL. It's fidelity.com/yourretirementplan. And just a reminder, also, if you missed any part of the discussion and you want to see it again, you can watch the replay of this show. You can go to youtube.com/fidelity. You can search Market Sense on fidelity.com. You can also search Market Sense in your Spotify app store, or Apple Podcast to listen to us. Maybe even on the golf course, like Leanna's grandfather, maybe. Finally, for any questions about making a financial plan or staying on track, Fidelity can help. You can call us, you can go online to our website, or you can download Fidelity's app to learn more and to have access to great people like Leanna DeVinny. So on behalf of Leanna and Urien Timmer, I'm Heather Hedges. Thanks so much for making the time today. And don't forget, we are live Tuesdays at 2 Eastern.
about the Fidelity Investments 2024 State of Retirement Planning Study. This study presents the findings of a national online survey consisting of 2014 adult financial decision makers age 18 plus who own an investment account. Respondents had at least one investment account. The generations are defined as baby boomers age 59 to 77, Gen X age 43 to 58, millennials age 27 to 42, and Gen Z age 18 to 26. Interviewing was conducted December 7th through December 15th, 2023 by Big Village, which is not affiliated with Fidelity Investments. The results may not be representative of all adults meeting the same criteria as those surveyed. Fidelity does not provide legal or tax advice. The information herein is general and educational in nature and should not be considered legal or tax advice. Tax laws and regulations are complex and subject to change, which can materially impact investment results. Fidelity cannot guarantee the information herein is accurate, complete, or timely. Fidelity makes no warranty with regard to such information or results obtained by its use and disclaims any liability arising out of your use of or any tax position taken in reliance on such information. Consult an attorney or tax professional regarding your specific situation. Information presented herein is for discussion and illustrative purposes only and is not a recommendation or an offer or solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Views expressed are as of the date indicated based on the information available at that time and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of the Fidelity speaker and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC. To the extent any investment information in this material is deemed to be a recommendation, it is not meant to be impartial investment advice or advice in a fiduciary capacity and is not intended to be used as a primary basis for you or your client's investment decisions. Fidelity and its representatives may have a conflict of interest in the products or services mentioned in this material because they have a financial interest in them and receive compensation directly or indirectly in connection with the management, distribution, or servicing of these products or services, including Fidelity funds, certain third-party funds and products, and certain investment services. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Diversification and or asset allocation do not ensure profit or protect against loss. Dollar cost averaging does not assure a profit or protect against loss in declining markets. For the strategy to be effective, you must continue to purchase shares in both market ups and downs. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Stock markets are volatile and can fluctuate significantly in response to company, industry, political, regulatory, market, or economic developments. Investing in stocks involves risks, including loss of principal. Foreign markets can be more volatile than U.S. markets due to the increased risks of adverse issuer, political, market, or economic developments, all of which are magnified in emerging markets. These risks are particularly significant for investments that focus on a single country or region. Fixed income investments entail interest rate risk. As interest rates rise, bond prices usually fall. The risk of issuer or counterparty default, issuer credit risk, and inflation risk. Foreign securities are subject to interest rate, currency exchange rate, economic and political risks, all of which are magnified in emerging markets. Target date funds are an asset mix of stocks, bonds, and other investments that automatically become more conservative as the fund approaches its target retirement date and beyond. Principal invested is not guaranteed. It is not possible to invest directly in an index. Fidelity Wealth Services provides non-discretionary financial planning and discretionary investment management through one or more portfolio advisory services accounts for a fee. Advisory services offered by Fidelity Personal and Workplace Advisors LLC, FPWA, a registered investment advisor. Discretionary portfolio management services provided by Strategic Advisors LLC, Strategic Advisors, a registered investment advisor. Brokerage services provided by Fidelity Brokerage Services LLC, FSB, and custodial and related services provided by National Financial Services LLC, NFS. Each a member NYSE and SIPC. FPWA, FBS, and NFS are Fidelity Investments companies. This information is intended to be educational and is not tailored to the investment needs of any specific investor. Personal and workplace investment products are provided by Fidelity Brokerage Services LLC, member NYSE, SIPC, 900 Salem Street, Smithfield, Rhode Island, 02917.